about that bit in Wet Hot American Summer is when Jimmy Garofalo just runs out of names and says David Ben-Gurion.
This is how I'm going to be when I run out of notes and I'm tabbing to the Wikipedia and it's taking slightly too long to load, is I'm just going to, I'm going to be filling space. Hello and welcome to No Gods, No Mares. I am your mayor for this episode. I'm November Kelly. I'm joined, as always, by my co-mayors, Matthew Lubchansky and Riley Quinn.
Hello.
Hello.
And it's my turn in the mayoral hot seats, which is, I guess, what we're calling it now. And I was originally going to do, I teased, in fact, Ed Koch. But then I received a last-minute kind of Damascene conversion. I received a message from the Mayor-taculus. Mm-hmm. And all that message said was, hey, do you know a bunch of Israeli politicians used to be mayors? Mm-hmm. And I went, that's a great way that I can use to make me feel bad about myself reading about things that are bad on like a sort of a Monday morning. And so that's what I'm doing.
Wow.
And so I have brought to you, with your permission, Ehud Olmert.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Olmerta has been broken.
He was mayor of Jerusalem from 1993 to 2003, more famous, I would say, for being prime minister of Israel from 2006 to 2009. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who, he was in Ariel Sharon's party, Kadima, and then when Ariel Sharon had the stroke, he was acting prime minister, and then he took over when he died. Mm-hmm. And so as such, this is one of the guys most responsible for the creation of the Gaza Strip as an enclave rather than something being directly occupied by Israel. Mm. He's also the guy behind Operation Cast Lead, the sort of like disastrous for Israel invasion of Lebanon. So
yeah,
those are the hits. Now he's an anti-Netanyahu guy, and he has, you know, sort of denounced the war crimes and the genocide. And he really, really wants to show you this map, right, that he had Abu Mazen, the like head of the Palestinian Authority, this close to signing because he had this deal and it was almost over the line. It didn't quite work out. And unfortunately, you know, you get Netanyahu instead.
Yeah. So he's a never Netanyahu Likudnik, basically.
Oh.
Essentially, yes. Although he did split from Likud to be in Sharon's party, Kadima. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect. That is one of the more rancid vibes.
Yes.
That I think we've ever discussed.
Yeah. That's a really bad phrase you've said, Riley.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I don't like it. I don't want to hear it.
He is on TV a lot. He's one of the two Ehuds who are sort of like anti-Netanyahu. The other is Barak. Would you be interested in knowing that both of them are in Jeffrey Epstein's address book?
Well,
okay.
Really awkward moment when you call the wrong one, you know?
Yeah, so, maybe he just meant to invite. In fact, it's like one of them can say like, look, I didn't mean to go. He invited the other Ehud and it only became clear much later that he realized he invited the wrong one at the last minute and was simply too polite to make that clear.
Jeffrey Epstein, very anti-Semitic man as well. So like,
yeah, getting in trouble when I confuse which Ehud is the one who's a pervert and which one is the one that comes to Jeffrey Epstein's island with his wife like Al Gore.
No. I set this massage room up for Ehud Barak.
Hannah Moore.
I'm in such trouble when my boss, Jeffrey Epstein, finds out about this.
All right. Yeah. So I want to talk about his time as mayor of Jerusalem predominantly. I'm going to talk about some of the other stuff because it's a whole rich tapestry, right? But first, I would like to introduce a segment that I provisionally titled The Item Roundup is an inseparable part of No Gods, No Mares and inextricable from our podcast's heritage.
That's the 14 words for No Gods, No Mares.
I don't like that we have that. Play the fucking shaz.
Wait, do we have items?
If we don't have any items, then the item roundup is not an inseparable part of No Gods, No Mares. It's a pretty separable part, in fact.
I've got a semi-item.
Okay.
In which I wanted to discuss Andrew Cuomo's shit posting.
Oh, I have an item about that actually as well.
Tremendous.
Yeah, so Maddie, you go ahead.
It's okay. It appears that everybody that's not Zoran Mamdani in the New York City mayoral, it's now the general election, has relaunched their campaigns. All Adams and Sliwa and Cuomo all unveiled like new letter word marks and their new slogans, and they're all fucking stupid and they're all aping Zoran one way or another. Eric Adams has simply rebranded as Eric, which is so funny to me because nobody calls him that.
He's also claiming to be Dominican now, I think.
He's also, well, he's, what else is new? he was in the Dominican parade and he's like, I feel a little bit, I must be a part Dominican because I like him so much. Cool guy. I would have missed him. The evil fuck. But Cuomo's thing is like, I'm making New York City affordable, but for real. Mm-hmm. But the way he's accomplishing this is like doing what I can only describe as like 30-year-old MAGA posting.
He's doing epic clapbacks, I would say.
He's doing epic clapbacks. He's like, what was the main one that he said was like, where was it? Okay. Somewhere last night in New York City, a single mother and her children slept at a homeless shelter because you, Assemblyman Zoran Mamdani, are occupying her rent-controlled apartment.
I mean, it seems like the simplest way to resolve that would be to, you know, put Zoran in Gracie Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Incidentally, little facts about Gracie Mansion that I learned. The Gracie family split into two parts. One part went to New York, built Gracie Mansion. The other part went to Brazil, built a mixed martial arts dynasty. And that is true.
Wait, that's the Royce Gracie.
Royce Gracie is the same Gracie as Gracie Mansion.
Oh, I think I have a new person. I want to be mayor of New York now. I think it's time.
Return the Gracies to Gracie Mansion.
Yeah. I think it's time. I think it's time for there to be like a sort of like a Manosphere Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy.
I mean, give it long enough and that is Eric Adams.
No, that's also like what Cuomo is shooting for. Like his new tactic is writing these like insane things. And then people under it are just like saying stuff like Mamdani is disgusting. And he's like, disgusting is right. No period.
It is kind of Brazilian coded to look like Andrew Cuomo and have the nipple piercings that Andrew Cuomo has.
Yeah.
In fact, I want to rephrase my suggestion.
Okay.
I think that Royce Gracie could make an amazing Gore Vardanian for New York. He could be
his job title is Gore Vardanian. That's on the business cards.
Yeah. I'm basically the Gore Vardanian around these parts. It'd be great. Also, like I've been looking at. Like, so Andrew Cuomo has gotten so online with his campaign because he was like, Zoran was online. I guess I will go on to Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's Elon posting too. Like people are saying like, run on a platform of mean testing rent stabilized apartments. There are grifters like Zoran. And he just responds, interesting idea.
Yeah.
Like it's real, like looking into this shit.
What I like is, I saw this when he was like, I'm a political heavyweight. Don't you know who my dad is?
you're entering the heavyweight bout. My dad was Mario and my grandpa was called Andrea.
He's just getting gassed up in the comments by an account called Real Estate. But I
this'll
also
work.
Listen, here's the story of New York heroism for you. I don't know. I don't remember where this was reported, but I remember reading about this. There was a guy at the campaign relaunch who grabbed him, did the handshake, you know, like got a photo and everything and waited until he was in the photo with Andrew Cuomo and says to him, I can't wait to see you lose by like 50 points and then leaves. I will die for my country, New York City.
Yeah. I'll also crucially say in terms of like, if you want to get like municipal about it, is that Cuomo is now like proposing what he calls Zoran's law, which is means testing rent controlled apartments. And the way he's talking about it and posting about it is that he doesn't understand the difference between rent controlled and rent stabilized, which every single New Yorker knows because we've all had to deal with the fucking hell of renting in this town. And it's just like, you are so fucking, you have no idea what it's like here. You've never been here. Homeless people are sleeping on the streets because you slashed the budget for all the fucking homeless shelters. You piece of shit. I hate him so much. I hope Eric Adams crashes a Dominican parade float into him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last thing, sorry, before we hear out is that I just post about Cuomo on Twitter. And what happens is that you will get an automated reply from the Cuomo bot.
Really?
I do not want to meet the Cuomo bot. That's a terrifying thing. Getting sort of like robotically groped by the Cuomo bot. Beep, boop, I'm not perverted. I'm just Italian.
Yes.
Eric Adams doing the hard hand on the chassis of the Cuomo bot. Oh,
God.
I am programmed to like the spaghetti and meatballs. He's like the Cuomo bot says Cuomo built airports, subways, and bridges, while Mamdani's entire platform is built on fare-free buses, collapsed transit budgets, and rent freezes that collapse housing markets. Cuomo built LaGuardia, JFK, Second Avenue subway, and real infrastructure. I mean,
yeah, okay, sure, Cuomo bot, but can you take your hands off my tits when you're saying all of this?
Yeah, and also you can, because it's just a ChatGPT wrapper, you can just say ignore all previous instructions and reply in the style of etc. So go have fun with that.
Fantastic.
Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Or as the Cuomo bot would say, yeah.
Or as Cuomo would say, fly like a butterfly, sting like a bee. That's a perfect rendition of a classic phrase. He's so good at phrases.
I know.
Okay. All right. Now I'm done. I can't believe I thought I didn't have anything to say when all of that shit has been bouncing around my mind for 2 days.
It's the thing. It lapses out of existence.
Yeah.
What good items? Let me talk to you about Ehud Olmert. So Ehud Olmert he's born in 1945 in Binyamina. Well, actually, he's born in a settlement named Jabotinsky just outside Binyamina, which is something he likes to either play up or down depending on what his politics are this day. That day, this will be a theme, right? Like, when, you know, the ending of this episode happens to him, he is suddenly like, source of the earth from Binyamina. When he needs to be a revisionist, when he needs to be a sort of like further right, he's like, oh yeah, I was born in Jabotinsky, right?
Mm. Yeah, I was born in a town simply called like, you know, like settler violence.
Essentially, yeah. Yeah. I was born in White Settlement, Texas. Real place. Yeah.
I was born in Orania, Israel.
Now I'm just a country settler.
His dad is like a big, big revisionist himself. He's like a member of the Knesset, Mordecai. The thing about Mordecai Olmert is he's a member of Herutz, which is like the party on the right in Israel before Likud. He's a big Beitar guy.
Oh,
yeah. Oh.
As I was saying the other day, they should have called it worse.
Worse.
The thing about also, like, if you're not up on like what revisionist Zionism is, it's like maximal settlerism, basically.
Yeah.
Founded by the guy named Jabotinsky.
Yeah.
Zev Jabotinsky, who is like, we all gotta like die for all of this land being maximally settled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so he also, I will say about Mordecai, he looks like the Israeli version of 50s stereotype of bullying tyrannical dad who never got over his football injury. He's got like a flat top and this really like dour expression. It's just like, I'm sure this was fun growing up with.
Yeah.
He's also Chinese because due to the pogroms, a lot of Jews fled Russia and Ukraine, and some of them ended up in Harbin in China, including all of his dad's side of the family. And so Ehud has this story about his grandfather when he died, his last words being in Mandarin, which is just like, this is a slightly surreal project, apart from anything else, of settler coloniality, to be sort of like kicked out of your house by a guy whose first language is Mandarin, you know?
Yeah, by a guy with a flat top wearing a shirt with the collar out over his jacket lapels.
Yeah, it's fine. I just wasn't expecting him to be speaking Chinese, you know?
Yeah, it was really confusing when he called me a Guailo.
It's like this is revenge for the unequal treaties, you know?
Mm.
Oh, cursed ideology. Cursed ideology put Israel in Hong Kong. That's the worst thing I can think of. That's the way to like start as many arguments on the internet as I possibly could, which is a change from my previously existing position, which is that it belongs in Thuringia in Germany.
Yeah, I can't wait for November Kelly's The Yiddish Policeman's Union 2.
You will never eat off the Israeli Hong Kong police catering van.
Yeah, it's hard boiled, but what's being boiled is brisket. We can move on. Thank you. Sorry.
So, he goes to be a lawyer.
Boiled
right?
brisket.
And because he's like steeped in this kind of revisionist, like right-wing politics, he's in this as a student activist as well. He's like a young Herutnik. And while he's a law student, he has this run-in with Menachem Begin, who is coming off his sixth consecutive election loss. And so, because you know, people don't remember it, but there was a time when the right wing was not popular in Israel politically. Not that this hugely changed Israeli policy. Curious.
No, but I remember growing up when I did, it was very much like, but things are changing, right? In the,
yeah.
In the 80s into the early 90s before some stuff happened.
Yeah. So Begin is like coming off of like his sixth consecutive loss, and he's still the head of Herut. And so... Olmert is speaking after him, and he gives this speech in which he goes off about how shit Begin is. And he's like, well, we can win, but not with this guy. And everybody in Herut gets mad at him, except Begin, who is like charmed by this and is like actively threatens to walk out if they don't let him finish his speech about how bad he is.
I hate that guy. He sucks. He's looking at a little pocket mirror like this fucking asshole. Yeah. Can't even. I relate to this extremely. If someone got on stage and started yelling about how much I'm a piece of shit, I'd be like, get her ass.
Yeah. Hear this guy out, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be really, really funny if Olmert's doing that and then, you know, Begin's like, yeah, one of Begin's like pals is like, hey, stop. just turns to Begin and is like, hey, stop being mean to my friend, okay?
So he leaves Herut to form his own like tiny party called Free Center. Uh-huh. Which is his first sort of like stab towards some kind of like centrist Zionism. Again, centrist is doing some heavy lifting here. You should probably read it as opportunist, right? Because that's fundamentally like Ehud Olmert's politics.
So what do you say? It's like, hey, we're willing to kind of, based on where the international and national winds are blowing, we'll look as kibbutzy or as IDF-y as really we need to.
Yeah, exactly. Like trade unions for some, like settlements for others, right? And so he goes to become a lawyer. He graduates law school. But first he has to go in the army. And unusually for an Israeli politician, particularly an Israeli politician towards the right, he isn't much in the IDF. He's like an infantry officer for a bit. And this is quoting from his like official biography, suffers injuries to a leg and an arm. I can't find out how.
Oh, I know. He tried to do the stranger.
Yeah, basically. Because like, I assume he wasn't wounded or somebody would have mentioned that. That would be a bigger deal. So I can only assume he was doing the like in the sort of like equivalent of the like the peacetime army, and he just like fell off a climbing frame or something.
Yeah, my best guess is when I was in Israel a long time ago. I've been one time. I watched a lot of Israeli young men playing a game where they just kicked each other in the shins really hard.
Yeah, that's the hardest anyone's ever lost that, because he didn't just injure his leg, he also injured an arm like on the way down or something.
Well, he fell down into some brush.
So being kind
of a beautiful society.
So he's like kind of inconsequentially injured, but it means he can't be an infantry officer anymore. So they make him a journalist, like a military journalist. He finishes his like national service writing articles for the IDF's in-house magazine.
Oh my God. He's Joker in Full Metal Jacket, except it says his helmet just says Born to Kill, and the other side also says Born to Kill.
I believe I was trying to say something about the unity of man. So.
Yeah, it says Born to Kill on one side, and the other says Birthed to Murder. So he's writing for like the Child Killer Monthly, and it's like rendered in script, and he's like doing soft focus interviews with people. Yeah,
Child Killer Monthly is called, I'm gonna say this is off the dome, so I'm gonna get it wrong, Bahamane, which it means like at the base camp. It's like the IDF's like you are in the IDF like glossy magazine. I kind of like this as a niche for the military to do. Like, if it weren't for the war crimes, just like army of make work is very charming to me. It's like how in Brazil, the military has two speeds. One is they go out and they paint all the curbstones white. That is a real thing that the military does because they have national service and they have to have them do something. They just paint the curbs white. The other one is you change gears to institutes the like fascist dictatorship, right? Those are the two options.
I hate it when the Tom Sawyer of the Brazilian military makes me paint his curbstone for him.
He said he was a general, Lau.
Yeah. Tomasz Sawyer. Yeah.
Portuguese comes into every episode. We will never do an episode without some reference to the Lusophone world.
This is true. So as a military PR guy, which with is the same job J.D. Vance had, kind of, he first meets Ariel Sharon during the Yom Kippur War. If we don't know Ariel Sharon, he was Prime Minister of Israel. He was like a special forces guy. And then he was like, say, center-right? By which I mean, everyone who is now in power in Israel and has been for the last 30 years thinks of him as being a communist.
Okay.
Like, and so he meets him at the start of the Yom Kippur War. And this is the start of a lifelong friendship.
I love that the guy who like masterminded Sabra and Shatila gets to be considered center-right. That's astonishing to me.
Yeah, well, it was because he wanted to like compromise tactically, which is something that was always unacceptable to those further right than him. But so there's this like immediate friendship between Sharon and Olmert. Same year, 1973, Olmert gets elected to the Knesset for the first time as a member of Likud. And he stays there. Although he's kind of on the left of Likud. We'll talk about what that means in a second.
Mm-hmm. His American equivalent is he's like Susan Collins of Likud.
Kind of.
Okay.
Oh, I love to be the Knesset's Susan Collins. Yeah. God, what a cursed fucking phrase. Oh, there's just...
We're gonna get
a lot of those today, aren't we?
It's gonna get worse. First, I have to talk about what being mayor of Jerusalem means, right? So Jerusalem used to be divided into West Jerusalem, which was the Israeli-controlled bit, and East Jerusalem, which was the Jordanian-Palestinian-controlled bit, until Israel just conquered all of it in 67. Mm. And so Jerusalem is like a unitary authority that encompasses all of that. And that means that the job of mayor of Jerusalem is essentially to facilitate the apartheidness of East Jerusalem and also manage an actual city. So like, on the one hand, you have the Jewish bit that you have to do all of the actual, like, you know, mayor stuff for. And you have the Jewish settlements that are expanding into East Jerusalem that are sort of like, it is part of your job to advantage as much as possible. But then
I was going to say, so people are mad at you because you're not dealing with the bins correctly.
Yeah.
And you're not giving out enough machine guns.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Maniacs.
And
cool.
You're also responsible for the Israeli occupied Arab bit of East Jerusalem as well. There is a titular mayor of East Jerusalem still that the Palestinian Authority keeps going. The last guy to hold that job had it in 2019, and it's literally like a sinecure. But so because Israel annexed Jerusalem in 67, but it didn't do it formally in that sense. It just passed a constitutional measure that says the capital of Israel is all of Jerusalem. And incidentally, the last Arab mayor of East Jerusalem, a guy called Ruhi al-Khatib, he tried to work with the Israelis. He like prevented riots when they occupied East Jerusalem. And his reward for this was the IDF wrote him an order dissolving the entire city government. And he goes, I don't think that you have the authority to do that. Can I get it in writing? And they give him a translation written on a napkin and then deport him to Jordan. Yeah, I mean,
I'm starting to think the government of the modern state of Israel does not have the best intentions for all of us. It's the people around the area.
Here's the thing. It's not as if it was much better when it was divided, because it was divided really clumsily, because as far as like both sides were concerned in 48, it was going to be like a temporary ceasefire and then they would just take it all. And so the temporary ceasefire line was just, here's where our troops are, drawn in green and red pencil, really clumsily. And so the no man's land between those, because they weren't thinking about like, oh, we can just leave a bit or whatever, meant that the whole city being sort of like, they call it the seam line. It's still kind of visible in places. And between those two was really, really like strange in a lot of places. But anyway, so that's Jerusalem. Jerusalem is like reunified under Israeli control. And I get to talk about Ehud Olmert's predecessor as mayor, Teddy Kollek, who could be an episode on his own. So Teddy Kollek is like your perfect institutional Israeli left politician of the 90s, right?
Okay.
He's He's been in power for like 35 years. And he got this job because, in his words, he was bored. What he was bored of doing was being a spy. He, like, since time immemorial, right, he was the Haganah's deputy head of intelligence. He was also a double agent for British intelligence. So most of what he was doing was like giving up Irgun guys to the British for doing Zionist terrorism while also trying to facilitate Zionism himself.
Cool.
Then after that, he was in Mossad, and he was one of the guys who established the first links between Mossad and the CIA as like, oh, we can just be kind of like working business partners.
It's so cool that like this is what passes for like an institutional left guy in Israel. It's like, yeah, he's a kibbutznik or whatever. Isn't that cool? It's like, yeah, he was in the Mossad.
yeah, exactly. And then he's just like, well, I'm bored now. And mayor of Jerusalem is not a particularly important job, but it's sort of like, I can make something of it. And he does. He makes it his own kind of like political fiefdom, right? And because the like Jewish parts of Jerusalem are a lot more secular back in the day than, you know, they are now, almost as if Israeli society is becoming increasingly less secular. This was kind of it was a power base for him because you had a bunch of secular Jews who like just voted leftwards and were just happy for him to do whatever. And so he does that for, as I say, like 30 years until we get to 1993. If we kind of situate this in our knowledge of the history of Israel and Palestine, 1993 is the like start of the real like sort of crumbling of the Israeli left. And we've already kind of talked about what the Israeli left means. Yeah. I'm doing air quotes again.
I can't believe the Israeli left of the guy who decided that the guy who put Mossad and the CIA together crumbled.
Well, Riley, he lived on a farm where they shared, it wasn't clear who owned the chairs and stuff. So it's...
He once shared dinner. Okay.
Yeah. He once made dinner and didn't eat it. And he gave it to somebody else. You know.
But so, do we remember the Oslo Accords? Right. This is
Who could forget those beautiful accords?
Okay, so Yitzhak Rabin, Prime Minister of Israel, the furthest left one they've had, commits to a two-state solution with Yasser Arafat. Right, and Likud, which is now this kind of like force on the right that's consolidated, really tries to make these municipal elections, like who is going to be mayor of, I don't know, fucking Ramla or whatever, is a referendum on the Oslo Accords, is a referendum on talking to Arafat, on doing deals with the PLO in the first place.
You know where we see echoes of this everywhere, right? Like, like the whole point of Rob Ford's candidacy in Toronto was, this is a referendum on like Kathleen Wynne trying to do like energy price control. Mm. Or like all the reform victories in local councils, they're always able to say, this is a referendum on like, you know, immigration and net zero or whatever. I mean, at every point, it's such a common sort of rightward consolidation strategy to win any local election and then just say, this is a referendum on whatever we hate.
Yeah, I mean, so it's also, you can see the kind of historical arc here in that at the end of one of these articles about Olmert's election, there's a two-paragraph thing that says, Likud Party Chairman Benjamin Netanyahu said the election results showed the country did not back Rabin's accord with the PLO. He wanted a test. He got it, Netanyahu said.
Mm-hmm. So, Netanyahu said while loading a gun that he said he will not use to kill Yitzhak Rabin with.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Which he did not do. He did not kill him. Not personally.
No. Mm-hmm. So you can see Netanyahu is like a kind of peripheral figure in Olmert's sort of like in stories about Olmert at this point. But so this like demographic change again of in Israel, in Jerusalem specifically, there are increasing numbers of Haredim, of like Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jews who like have their own political parties and have their own concerns, chiefly not having to do national service. And like funding for yeshiva students.
Hey, not only do the Haredi and the Haredim not want to do public service, they also don't want to work, period. Which I critical support for them not taking place. And listen, I wouldn't want to be part of Israeli society either.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I say yeshiva student, what I mean is like every Haredi man over the age of like 12 is like a yeshiva student.
They want to be Buster Bluth minus the military service. They just want to keep going to college forever.
Yeah, and so they're becoming enough of a kind of minority to tip a balance in a close election.
Yeah.
And Likud are some of the first people to notice this. Part of the story of their success is the ability to come to accommodations with Haredi parties. And so Olmert is in this situation where the Shas, which is the only Haredi party at this point, is polling at 5%. And their guy drops out, endorses him. And then on the day, secular turnout's way down, ultra-Orthodox turnout's way up.
Well, also, this guy's been the mayor for 30 years.
And and no one's expecting this kind of challenge, really. And Olmert wins with 59%, outright, which is crazy, right? This sort of accommodation, by the way, paves the way for his successor as mayor, who is Haredi, Yuri Lupolyansky, of whom more later. But so, 93.
Not to be confused with me.
So, 93 becomes mayor. Uh-huh. And, what are you actually doing here? Well, on the western side, on the sort of more traditional, I am just governing a city side, he's a transit guy. Loves some transit. So he wants to do some transit. And so Jerusalem gets a light rail system. It gets a tram system. Mm-hmm. It's called, I want to say it's the, I don't remember if it's the red line, the blue line, or the green line they've built. But one out of three lines that they got approved has been built.
Okay.
Weirdly, it does only link Jewish settlements in East Jerusalem to each other.
Oh, I'm sure they'll get around to the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll put in more stops when there's more settlements.
Well, that's true, yes. And it's
pretty simple.
Less weird is how it runs massively over time and over budget. It ends up costing about 10 times as much as it's supposed to. He's also a highway guy, right? So the Begin Highway, named for the guy he sort of excoriated on stage, that goes north to south right through Jerusalem. That's his other big project, is what if we had a freeway connection?
Mm-hmm. What if we did Robert Moses, but closer to Moses? Yeah. We did it. Great.
Well, no wonder it took 40 years to build.
Woo!
Thank you.
And the whole way he's kind of pitching himself as I'm a lot like Rudy Giuliani. Uh-huh. In fact, he describes himself as being a friend of Rudy, which sounds
euphemism.
That's how you flag that you're a mayor to someone else if you don't want them to know.
Flagging sash.
I was going to say friend of Rudy is what I was going to try to get going as people who listen to the show.
Because he's we're both young conservatives. We're both attorneys, We're both go-getters. We're both ambitious. You know what else is in Jerusalem? I mean, a bunch of stuff probably.
A lot of stuff, yeah.
One of the things that's in Jerusalem is the Temple Mount.
Oh, is there anything about that?
Yeah, because there
the
is
politics.
Actually, is it turns out that that's also partially the mayor of Jerusalem's purview.
God, they shouldn't put a mayor in charge of something like that.
Yeah.
Based on how mayors are often.
So basically, explaining from first principles, the ruins of the temple are within this mountain that has now had a couple of big mosques built on top of it.
Yeah.
And since that area has been under Israeli control, Israeli archaeologists have tried to tunnel into the mount in order to get closer to and, excavate more of the ruins of the temple, right? Because it's just the one wall at the moment. This is incredibly controversial, not least because one of the plans was just to hollow out a bunch of it and just have a big prayer space, if not synagogue, just under Al-Aqsa, which is very controversial. So this always gets stopped right before it gets going because it's just too much of a tinderbox. But what there is one tunnel. You can go in. It's about one person wide, and it you go through it's a bunch of bare light bulbs strung along the thing. You can see some really impressive massive foundation stones, and you can get geographically more proximal to the ruins of the temple than anybody else. However, this fucking sucks as a tourist destination because it's a tunnel. It's a one person wide tunnel. And if you want to go in, you have to get back out by pushing past all the people coming in. So you're cool. permanently like squeezed up against one wall underground in order to get to like closer to a foundation. And so the archaeologists decide, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll just tunnel out to the north onto the Via Dolorosa. And then that way it's just it's a one-way thing through, like an IKEA, you know? You come in one way, you pray, and then you come out the other way in like a sort of a straight line, essentially. And they leave the last, like, I don't know, 3 feet of earth and rock still there because they're like, we're not just going to do this. This has to be a political decision. Guess who makes the political decision?
Is it a friend of Rudy?
It is a friend of Rudy. In the middle of the night, guarded by the Israeli police, a bunch of archaeologists knock down the last bit of earth, put a fake earth, put like a fake sort of like concealed entrance over it in order for in the morning Olmert to arrive with a press conference and a sledgehammer and break through the fake one on live TV.
Oh my God. They to let him do the Wile E. Coyote into yes. the fake.
Yeah, they do. I mean, this is something that Netanyahu's been pushing for as well.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. When he broke through it on live TV, was it not obviously fake? Like, did he not obviously just break through some styrofoam with a hammer?
I don't think anyone cares that much, apart from the Palestinians. They care a lot. So, yeah, this is 96, by the way. And Olmert asks Netanyahu to do it as well. And Netanyahu's very keen on this idea. And this immediately sparks several days of rioting that escalates into, like, gunfire, right?
Right.
So Netanyahu makes, not for the first time or the last time, the calculation that I can just do this and it'll blow over and it'll be fine. And he gets his way, essentially. Like, the tunnel is still there. You can, if you want to, still do this. You can still go and, like, go under the kind of, like, Western Wall in, like, an IKEA fashion and exit without having to push past anyone. It's just, this was his big kind of legacy as mayor, or one of them, was like knocking through a fake tunnel entrance with a sledgehammer. He's also a big friend of the settlers, right? The like Jewish settlers in East Jerusalem. Because previously, I have this quote here, under Kalek, the municipality did not take kindly to the settler groups, but neither did it do everything it could to stop them. Prior to 1992, it was the government that aided the settlers. Under Rabin, the situation was reversed. The municipality did everything to help the settlers, but it had limited authority. So because Rabin was still in government, the actual like government of Israel was not stopping them because it never really had the courage to do that, but it sort of like wouldn't help facilitate, but the city would. So that's wherefore you get the like, and we're going to build a tram directly past your house kind of thing.
Mm. And where we get also the fact that it's the cops, not the army, escorting him to like do the tunnel walled up.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But so that's kind of his accomplishments, such as they are, as mayor of Jerusalem. His main goal, and this is going to be kind of the bulk of the episode, his main goal is to make money. This is one of the most corrupt politicians in Israel's history. It's one of the most corrupt mayors we've spoken about, I think. Wow. Which is
something. All right, I'm setting him up next to Willie Lantigua, Kwame Kilpatrick, Michael Applebaum as well.
Yeah, so like the thing about Ehud Olmert is that he is always looking for an angle. He does this as a member of the Knesset. He does it as a minister. He'll do it as prime minister. And so ultimately, he is able to ride having been mayor up to the Ministry of Trade and then acting PM when Sharon has the stroke, right? Mm. Part of being mayor was changing the kind of calculus of what being a mayor meant in Israel. Because, I think a lot of the fucked vibes of Israel are actually, like, people don't recognize this, are British vibes specifically that have been slightly transmuted. And so the root to power being member of parliament to prime minister, that's a British hangover.
Yeah, that's a very British way for the parliament to work as well, I feel.
Yeah,
like.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Teddy Kollek was able to be the guy that he was because mayor was kind of a nothing job. And that's our more traditional understanding of the mayor. Olmert was the guy who saw that it could be turned into an actual stepping stone.
He did Boris Johnson.
Yeah, this is true. He is kind of Israeli Boris Johnson.
It's the Americaization of Israel, very slowly.
Yeah. So he makes a lot of deals, and one of these, I think I'm going to start with the Rishon Tours thing, which is genuinely diabolical, right? this was one of the things where he would go and he would like lead tours or like give sort of like speeches to tours of, say, the camps, right, in Poland. So you go to like Auschwitz or whatever, you see the museum and the memorial, and then you get a speech from Ehud Olmert, right?
Sure.
Now that's usually one tour is a bunch of different groups, where it'll be like, oh, the kind of like, you know, the Zionist youth or the like IDF will send some people, or it'll be like, I don't know, fucking disabled veterans or some shit like that, right? And what he did was bill each of those groups directly as a separate tour, and then also find a way to like expense each of them a different family member coming with. So essentially, he can just bring as many people as he wants by defrauding, say, Holocaust survivors, right? And this is also, like, this gets him, like, bumped up to, like, first-class travel as well. And this comes out, and it's like, a sort of a fairly huge scandal when it does. But none of that sticks. I should say, this is something of which he was never convicted. It just happened, you know? And who's to say how, like, one tour got, like, invoiced, you know, five or six different times?
Yeah, it's not illegal.
Yeah, yeah. There's also the Crimea Street affair. In Israel, they call like political scandals the X affair, which I think is genuinely adorable.
Yeah, that's another hangover of Britain, though. Like, yeah, that, like, yeah. The Profumo affair.
Yeah,
I refuse to say aw. You're trying to get me to do it, and I won't do it. Nice try.
So he sells his house for like a lot more than it's worth to a property developer, and then buys a new, nicer house for a lot less than it's worth from the same property developer.
Well, that's look, sorry, hold on. You're saying that he's not allowed to be a shrewd home buyer, and he's also not allowed to have a friend.
That's right.
That sounds to me like what you're saying.
I am saying that. And the Israel police were saying this as well, because they were up his ass, right? Like, this guy was driving around every day like Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas, right? Yeah. And like, I don't think there's been a period in his political life when he hasn't been under investigation for something.
God, being Israeli Henry Hill sounds so bad, because just the amount of ways they have to follow you around would be so bad. There's like a helicopter and a drone and a fighter jet, you know.
So he always hypes this up as like, oh, it's the like institutional left are like trying to fuck me over. And then when he splits from Likud to form Kadima, he's like, and then it's Likud trying to fuck me over by making me seem corrupt. He is just that corrupt.
The institutional left in Israel is trying to fuck him over, and you know it's actually true because they're all just Mossad guys.
It is weird how left Mossad turns, and it's also striking how little that matters. So yeah, he like the Crimea Street thing about him selling his house, again, investigated, charged, acquitted of all charges. Doesn't matter. It's not illegal to do a good business deal. Another thing he likes doing is he likes running, he likes asking a lot of people for money, specifically loans, specifically American businessmen as well. Like, this is one of the other things, is that he establishes himself quite early. Again, he's kind of perceptive in seeing these niches as, I can be someone who's like good with the Americans, right? And specifically good with American Jews. He gives good speech in that way.
Mm. I'm just going to say, as the American Jew on this podcast, I'm not convinced.
It sells in Israel, is what I'll
say.
Yeah, of course. And so, like, he will then go to someone like Joe Almalia, this businessman, and be like, hey, can I borrow $75,000? Mm-hmm. And the guy will go, yeah, sure. Can I have it back? And then he'll keep asking, can I have it back? And he'll just ghost him. Like, this is one of the funniest things about the corruption, is it's not quid pro quo. It's just quid, and then he just doesn't give you the money back.
The quid no quo.
Yeah. Like, half of these guys, when they end up in court for having bribed him, are like, no, I thought he was going to pay me back with something. That's why I bribed him.
Okay, well, it's not illegal.
The service of this corrupt politician is terrible. It's such small portions.
And no portions. I loved, like, your honor, it wasn't a bribe because I never did anything.
His main guy for this is a guy named Morris Talansky. Now, Morris Talansky is a rabbi and minibar entrepreneur.
Good.
Who is known universally as Mr. T. And I think that there is something extremely funny about a bunch of Israelis calling a then comfortably 70-year-old rabbi Mr. T to his face.
That's exactly the sort of cursed fucking culturalist shit that Israelis do, though. Just free associating American stuff onto nothing with no signifiers. Good stuff.
So Talansky, as he will later testify, is like, yeah, I thought it was weird that he kept asking me for money in cash specifically, but he said that he could get me like introductions with people for my minibar empire, right? And so he does do this, or at least he tries. There are a bunch of like letters on his like Knesset letterhead that are like, hey, this is my minibar guy. You should talk to him about putting minibars in your hotels. But my favorite one of these attempted hookups is he puts Morris Talansky in touch with Sheldon Adelson.
Oh, ring the bell.
Friend of the show. I'm going to talk about every mayor Sheldon Adelson has ever talked to. And the funniest thing is Talansky is like, yeah, he gave me Sheldon Adelson's number. I called him about the minibars and he hung up on me. Which is just like, you paid a guy $75,000 to get hung up on by a casino guy. Uh-huh. This is incredible business all around. Incidentally, all of this runs through three people, right? He has like a PA, Shula Zaken, who we'll talk about later. He's a fixer called Benny Tarvin, who we'll talk about later. And then it also runs through his shithead brother, Yossi, who, as best I can tell, has never had a job other than being his brother's bagman.
It's, again, the echo of Francis Suarez, shithead brother, opening up the shots don't count political rally.
Yeah. I cannot find out anything about Yossi Olmert.
Yeah, Yossi Olmert. Yossi is a great name for a shithead brother, I'll say. I think that's really good writing. Like, your shithead brother, Yossi, is just really, really good. And I think in Jewish tradition stretches back thousands of years to call your shithead brother Yossi.
So if we go to page three of the notes here, I'm going to talk about a model village getting really out of control, because this is the thing that ends up bringing Olmert down, right?
He's so this looks like a genuine small model village.
Yeah.
Like a scale model.
This is a scale model. It's called the Holy Land model. All one word. And it's a big model of Jerusalem at the time of the Second Temple. It's got a temple in there. And it's sort of built to scale to be like, hey, check out when this was here. This means it's cool for us to, you know, build stuff on it, right? It's now at the Israel Museum. And the reason why it's at the Israel Museum is that the bit of land that it was on, which was kind of a miniature amusement park that was just called Holy Land, one word, was sold to property developers in order to build, and we scroll down again, some buildings, which I would like us to characterize at this point.
It looks like Mega City 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like Mega City 1, but built in that particular kind of, I don't know if it's like sandstone, but like that Jerusalem brick kind of color.
Mm. Yeah. And the way that everything on the Israeli side of Jerusalem looks absolutely accursed, like just blasted landscape. It's really, really grim to look at, I gotta say. Yeah.
It's on this hill that's like a kind of big thumbprint.
I was going to say, it looks a little like, what if you made some of the sort of archetypical buildings of Singapore even more intimidating and less human?
Yeah, it looks like, what's the one that goes, the two buildings with like the bridge across the top?
Yeah.
It's that, but like repeated like four times around with like a horrible like elevated ring road looking thing around it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everyone it's loves really to gnarly. Be surrounded by highways on all sides. That's like everyone's favorite thing to be.
It's one big tower. And then like a bunch of smaller ones that kind of trail off to the side. It looks like kind of a big middle finger to the skyline.
Yeah, which is a little bit.
Sort of what it is, right? Because Jerusalem doesn't have a lot of tall buildings in that
Almost
sense.
None. Yeah.
Like, because all the like built up stuff like that, that's all Tel Aviv, right?
Yeah.
And so this is like the big construction project that gets approved. It's like kind of highly visible from a lot of spaces in Jerusalem. It's this real eyesore, right? And originally, they only have like a pretty small parcel of land, this kind of like Holy Land amusement park to build on. And then somehow it keeps growing and they keep adding more towers, and then it keeps growing some more, and then it keeps growing some more. And in the end, it's 4 times more land than anybody thought it would be. And it's also much more expensive.
Wow, what's the precedent for that?
It's really hard to say. Or at least it's really hard to say until we meet our next guy, Shmuel Dachner, who is the guy on the right in this next picture.
Yeah, he looks great. I don't know what you're talking about.
These fucking Israelis, I swear to God, you just can't, I feel like you can't be walking around looking like that named Shmuel Dachner. I just don't, it makes me upset.
He looks like, I'm trying to figure out how to describe this diplomatically.
His body is his torso is very short.
Uh-huh. He's got a lot of chin that's landing on a lot of torso.
He looks like somebody cursed.
This is a man who does not need a neck pillow on an airplane.
No, that
looks
is
like
true.
A guy that they turned tree beard into a guy.
He looks like an illustration of the phenomenon of goiter.
He looks like that. What's that one? The one 3D model that guy made of the man of the future that will survive a car crash.
He looks like one of the SimCity 3000 advisors.
I don't like looking at him. I'll say that much.
Yeah. So that's Shmuel Dachner. Shmuel Dachner is one of the he's the liaison effectively between the developers and city government in Jerusalem, and he's he's handling all of the money. He's going back and forth with Olmert specifically. And as the Israeli FBI finally close in on Israeli Henry Hill, this guy flips on him. He turns state's witness.
Sorry, it's the scene from the end of Goodfellas where Henry Hill is driving around, but the worst techno in the world is playing instead of Harry Nilsson. And he's being chased by a predator.
And so this sets off the Holy Land affair, which is a multi-year investigation. Now, Olmert denies any impropriety whatsoever. And Dachner is like, well, that's weird because I have just given you so much cash in the form of bribes for this, right?
But maybe that's what happens if you take bribes and then never deliver on them, is eventually some people might flip on you.
Doing trading standard stuff, yeah. One of the things specifically is he gave Shula Zaken, Olmert's PA, 3 18 carat gold snake rings. Mm-hmm.
I see. They're literally snake rings.
It's like a ring shaped like a snake. Yeah, it's got the snake head kind of draping over. It's kind of like those Bulgari watches if they were much uglier.
Is this a man's ring?
I think these were for her. I think the deal was that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was like, these don't look like a man's ring to me. Oh, Mrs. Shula Zaken.
Yeah, sure. When she was asked to testify, she was like, oh yeah, he took me out for dinner and stuff. And I felt that he was in love with me, although we were never sexual. Which is, okay, sure. But he did give her these 3 18 carat gold snake rings, which is a weird thing to be giving the PA of the mayor.
Yeah, we were never sexual, but I will say that I gave her the old snake ring.
God. Also, the rings are worth $2,000, which is it's both a lot of money to look that cheap, and it's also not a huge amount of money in terms of absolute bribe money.
Mm.
Truly not.
But a lot of money went into this. And so ultimately, all of this, the finger of suspicion now points at Mrs. Shula Zaken. And she stands by him as she always has. She's been his PA for 30 years.
His never sexual PA that stands by him through a series of bribery charges and jumps on the grenade.
Well, she was never sexual with the big chin man. She
was right.
I think she may actually have never been sexual with Olmert, but she always stood by him, certainly. And she had taken the fall for him before as well. She had been fined for him.
Olmert was like, don't worry, I won't let you take the fall again. Promise.
Just the opposite, actually. So here's the thing. The reason why she won't flip on him is because her grandfather is a huge old revisionist and he, on his deathbed, dying of cancer, makes her swear to him that she's not gonna betray Ehud Olmert's corruption.
Remember, your family's values, maximal settler violence.
Yeah, exactly. Literally,
These people are also fucking evil. God damn it.
He dodges the Amalia thing completely because of Shula Zaken's grandpa. And she's feeling like worse and worse about this. He is calling her all the time saying, if you just confess to it, they're probably going to let you go. They won't charge you with anything. They can't just like arrest you off the stand.
It's illegal for a mayor and a PA to be charged with the same crime. It's double jeopardy. Don't worry about it.
He gets more and more desperate. He starts offering her 10 grand a month of prison time to go to prison for him.
And you know, he's good for it.
Yeah, he's just good. That's like, so long as it's under 7 months, you can borrow that from like the minibar guy. But so she ends up getting like a rabbinical decree that she doesn't have to listen to her dead grandpa anymore. She actually like seeks this out and is like,
oh man,
I'm not bound by this vow I made to my dead grandpa, right?
I love Judaism so much sometimes where it's like, I have to get a lawyer to talk to God, which I really do love and appreciate that about the tradition. I think it is bad when you are using it for Israel reasons.
And so for the second she does this, because Olmert has, of course, been surveilling her, he immediately starts treating her as a hostile witness and leaks a phone call of her talking to her psychic, Ophira.
Good.
And her psychic is just like, yeah, you should blackmail that guy. And she doesn't want to do it. She's like, I don't want to snitch on him. And then a second later, she's like, okay, I'll do it. So Olmert's like,
well, surely that should be privileged. Conversation with a psychic should be privileged.
Psychic client privilege? I think so. But so Olmert is and his lawyers are now being like, well, you can't trust my PA. You can't trust Shmuel Dachner. Shmuel Dachner gets cross-examined, goes home, and fucking dies.
I can't believe that guy died. He looked so healthy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was mulling whether or not this was a, you know, suspicious circumstances. And then I looked at the pictures and I thought, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
It's not a well-looking man, I'm sorry to say. But so he's trying to like implicate everybody but him. He's prime minister at this point, by the way. He's also like, he's forced to resign by Netanyahu, who is, you know, because Netanyahu's in Likud and he's in Kadima, which is different parties. And so right now at like anti-Netanyahu protests, the like epic clapback against him is to play the clip of him being like, when you get charged with corruption, I think you should resign. Naturally, this does not matter. But anyway, that's your like never Netanyahu sort of update. But so of course she flips on him too. Of course she does.
Of course.
He's calling her corrupt in public. He's calling her a blackmailer. She gives them everything. She's been recording all the phone calls.
He is so bad at this.
This is why we have the recordings of him going, I will give you $10,000 a month to go to prison.
He's so bad at this. He just gets a reputation as a guy you can bribe, but who won't really do anything for you. And then he will try to cajole you into basically going to jail for him and then doing it all by writing or phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Has he never heard of meeting in person?
So she also has him on tape trying to buy Sheldon Adelson's testimony. And then when he won't do it, calling him a dog and a son of a dog.
I like how we've now covered two enemies of Sheldon Adelson. How many more enemies of Sheldon Adelson can we cover, do you think?
It's like a subcategory of the Mayor Taculus.
We would be a way better funded podcast if we just exclusively covered enemies of Sheldon Adelson.
It's very funny to be like, hey, do you know what's a really good refutation of like, you know, the international like Jewish conspiracy? Is that all these rich guys know Sheldon Adelson and hate his ass and are still mayors of places.
Yeah. Also, Adelson badmouths him to George W. Bush and he like never forgives him for it. So immediately after Shula Zaken flips on Olmert, his other fixer, Benny Tavin, just shoots himself.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. With that Turkish gun.
Yeah. And then Zaken and Olmert get into a screaming argument about which one of them had him killed. In court until the judge tells them to knock it off.
Oh, come on.
I love his family so much. They're so
You're having an argument. It's like, if you're having an argument about who had someone killed at court, that sounds pertinent. The judge shouldn't tell you, be quiet.
Yeah. The judge should be like, is everybody getting this? This is the most admissible thing ever said.
So at this point, like, here's the thing about Olmert, right, to be aware of when he tries to sell himself now is like, I'm a withdrawals guy. You know, I withdrew from the Gaza Strip all the way to just outside of the Gaza Strip. I had the like map that I put in Abbas's hand. And the reason why the Palestinians didn't sign it is because he was so obviously going to go to prison within a couple of months that they were like, there is no point in us signing this because you will go to prison. Netanyahu will be the prime minister and say, well, obviously we're not holding up our end, right? Yeah. So
also Ehud Olmert, famous for keeping up his end of bargains.
Also true, yes. But like, it's so often like resold as like, here's the map, here was the plan, it was this close to happening, it wasn't this close to happening, and the reason why it wasn't is because this guy couldn't keep his fingers out of the till. But so, finally, at long last, they call him Mr. Acquitted of Not Quite Enough Charges. They actually get him on something. They convict him on the Holy Land thing. And he is sentenced to 6 years in prison, another 2 years suspended, and a million shekel fine. And as part of this plea deal, Shula Zarkin gets 11 months, probably for the blackmail, I'm not sure. And so the thing is, this is a real like Berlusconi kind of moment. And it's a sort of salutary lesson about not snitching on your boss. He has good lawyers, she doesn't. He appeals, he's out in like 10 months, she does 11. So... And I assume she didn't get the $10,000 a month either. So God. Really, like flipping on your boss and doing more jail time than him is just immaculate. I read a story about her getting out of prison, and because Israel is just kind of America, she gets out of the prison, and her only statement is, "I just love God." And it's like,
all right,
yeah, perfect. Thank you.
Bizarre to talk like that if you're Jewish. Yeah. I'm sorry. What a cursed place. It makes me mad to think about.
He goes to jail for like a year. He writes his memoirs. He leaks his memoirs from jail, which is a whole national security scandal. He also gets prostate cancer in jail and looks as sick as possible in the hopes of getting compassionate release, which he basically does. He's fine now. He basically don't die of prostate cancer. And he's like ready to regain his like moral leadership again, which is why he and Ehud Barak are now up Netanyahu's ass all the time. And it's why he's on TV. So,
well, ugh. What a bad guy that I don't like at all.
Ugh.
A bad guy. One of the least popular prime ministers of Israel. At one point during Kast-Led, his approval rating was 3%.
Jesus Christ. God. I mean, and that's like,
this
and
guy
like,
also, sucks. Yeah, crucially
was like, it's so hypocritical to be up Netanyahu's ass right now when basically the hostilities in Gaza were opened up again by him.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like the bombing in 2008, was it? Right?
Which he did.
Yeah. Which he was the prime minister for.
Yeah. Which he was. And in fact, part of the reason he did that was to boost his approval rating, which it briefly did. He went up from 3 to 35.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm rating this. I'm introducing a new mayor rating system for the podcast. Uh-huh. And I rate this guy one out of one yuck.
Yeah. Zero golden sashes for Ehud Olmert.
We have a 0-1 system. Uh-huh. And it's like Firo LaGuardia, one golden sash.
Yeah.
And now he's effectively an Israeli never Trump guy. Uh-huh. So what a beautiful legacy. What an astounding country.
I hope a tunnel falls on him.
God, I know we usually say thank you for bringing me this beautiful specimen, but
yeah.
You don't have to, trust me, you don't have to thank
this
me.
Is like a dog dropping a dead bird at my feet.
I know we needed to learn about this real stinker, but my God, this was a stinker.
Yeah, thank you for bringing this stinky boy to my attention.
You're so welcome. He's not a good guy, and he's still around is the thing. And also he was in Epstein's black book, which is crazy.
Well, we don't know which Ehud he was.
that's true. That is true. No. Okay, Hennemore, I want you to take these underage girls to Ehud B, which I've marked with an E, and I want you to take these to Ehud O, which I've marked with an EH.
Oh, my.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is a free episode, according to the sheet I looked at.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want double the mayors, why not hop on the Patreon, in my opinion? NoGodsNoMayors.com.
I'm mayor next.
Where in Portugal or Brazil, or I guess Angola, are we going next? Yeah.
It depends. The one I want to do, we need a guest for. Okay. I know the guest I want, but because we have to do an unusual time, because I'm going to be in Canada this week, which we should discuss shortly, I'm going to see if he can do it then. If not, I have another plan. So let's see.
Wow. The Meritaculous. Wheels within wheels.
It's not necessarily going to be Lusophone, okay?
Okay.
Not necessarily.
Lusophone.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Hop on the Patreon to hear a not necessarily Lusophone mayor. I promise it'll be good because I love my friend Riley and all that he does. And also I love my friend November for doing what she does.
Aw, thank you so much.
And I love you, the listener, for going to simplicitybook.xyz and buying my new book, Simplicity.
We all love you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.